outside of the scriptures and outside of our understanding of God, eternity is a concept that we find very difficult to grasp. I remember back in high school, the science teacher drawing this particular symbol behind you, or behind me, I mean, as a representation of eternity. The arrow going this way, forever and ever and ever and ever, and the arrow going this way, forever and ever and ever. And this is something that the scriptures reveal is the nature of our God. To the only God, our Savior, be glory, majesty, and dominion. Dominion and authority before all time. That's that way. And now and forever. In Isaiah 57, high and lofty one who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. And then, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Now, as we ponder this, I want to plug in a verse that we talk about a lot, and that is, the things that are seen are temporary. That means everything that we experience and understand from the physical life that we live is temporary. The things that are not seen are eternal. So the conclusion that we need to draw is that God is the center. God is the reality of eternity, a never-ending, never-changing standard. Now, the title of this lesson this evening is Strangers and Pilgrims. Because the fascinating thing about this life is that Christians are truly the only ones who are reflecting, or hopefully reflecting, the eternal standards by which God lives in heaven. And he once lived here, but there are so few people who are doing it that we become the strangers and the sojourners and the pilgrims. Another passage is, of old you laid the foundation of the earth. The heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will endure. Yes, they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will change them, and they will be changed, but you are the same, and your years will have no end. So the eternal character of God, that will abide, that will remain. If we become like God, we will remain. But if we continue, or if we don't decide that we are going to be the kind of people that God has created us to become, then we'll only be temporary. And when this life is over, we will be over. The life that we choose to live here will determine our own eternity. And this unchanging and absolute standard is set forth in these verses. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. Love is part of God's eternal character. This agape love that we talk so much about, this agape love that doesn't often exist in this world, a completely unselfish care and concern for the needs of others, whether it makes it easier or more difficult for us, whether we like it or not, we will always take the road of being acting in the best interests of others. That's God. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Mercy and truth go before your face. Brethren, if we were to imagine God, we could not imagine a God as wonderful, as kind, as merciful, as just, as fair as God actually is. To be in the presence of someone who cares about us, who cares about our needs, who will always treat us fairly, and always be just in the way that he goes about things, is a wonderful blessing beyond anything that the grace and the mercy of God can even begin to explain or even begin to be a part of what we understand. The Lord is righteous. He loves righteousness. His countenance beholds the upright. And the word upright is just another word for righteous. So for all eternity, God and all who are with God have reflected and dwell in the nature and character of God. For eternity, for all eternity, God is love. For all eternity, God is righteous, and he is gracious, and he is just. And so throughout all eternity, the angels and God, and of course the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, all of those that are there, they have lived in love, in righteousness, always telling the truth. Now this is the world God inhabits. And for a little while, our world and his world mirrored each other. There was a complete similarity between the image of God and the angels and the world that was in heaven and the world that was on the earth. God created man in his own image. That means a reflection. There is a reflection. There is a mirror image of heaven and earth, of man's character and God's character, and the world that they live in. So being in the image and likeness of God, the earth was filled with the same love, the same righteousness, the same justice. But Eve's choice changed the image of our world, and now, interestingly enough, God's world and our world are not at all the same. Matter of fact, here's how John puts it. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love, the agape love of the Father is not in him. There is a chasm between heaven and earth. But as Paul said, the things that are seen, that's what we think are normal. But they're only temporary. The things that are eternal, the things that are not part of our understanding, the things we talked about this morning that only the knowledge of the Scriptures can bring into our hearts. We only know the aimless conduct handed down by tradition from our fathers. Only the Scriptures bring us back. And so do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him, for all that is in the world. You grasp what a terrible statement this is. All that is in the world is not of the Father, but is of the world. It doesn't exist in heaven. It doesn't exist in eternity. It is not real. It is a counterfeit. It is a false image of what God created. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life are not of the Father. So this new image of the world is first reflected Cain and Abel. This is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one. The firstborn son of Adam was not a son of God. The firstborn son of Adam was the son of the devil. Not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother righteous. Two fathers, two sons, and two images. I love these typos. They make me humble. You are of your father, the devil. The desires of your father you want to do. Now, who's saying this? The Son of God. The Son of God who came down to this earth to do God's will. And the Son of God who came down to this earth to do God's will is being rejected by these who are of their father, the devil, and the desires of their father they want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father thereof, or the father of it. You think we could actually say this world is a lie? That the world, love not the world, the things of the world, for all that is in the world is not of the Father. It is not eternal. It is only temporary. And it is the true destination of sin. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Here's the world. Here's God's world. God's world is love and righteousness and justice and honor. Everybody caring about everybody else. No one ever wanting to harm anyone else. Always wanting to act in the best interest of others. Always wanting to do what's just and what's fair. It is the criteria of their words. It is the criteria of their thoughts and their actions. And so throughout all eternity, the way that life that God lives and those in God's realm live is completely gone. The wickedness of man was great. Every intent of the thoughts of his heart. Here is one who was created in the image and likeness of God. And now, except for Noah and his family, every intent of the thoughts of his heart, only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. Could you agree with me that that was a dismal, wicked place? We wouldn't fit in there. We wouldn't want to be in a world like that. I think we're catching some glimpses of it. But we're not there. But how different from eternity and God's dwelling. There was a complete disconnect between the reality of this world and the reality of eternity. Between the world God dwells in and the world that we dwell in. And suddenly, it's not God's world anymore. We sing the song, "This is my Father's world." But when we're singing that song, we're talking about the material creation. Because when we start talking about the world as John said it was, love not the world nor the things in the world, for all that is in the world is not of the Father, but is of the world. And so at the flood, God revealed the transient nature of this lifestyle because he brought it to an end. I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. The flood is God's giant billboard. And Peter will use it when we get there in just a few moments in 2 Peter chapter 3 to say, this they willfully forget. When they say, where's the promise of his coming? They willfully forget that the earth was formed of water and in the midst of water, and it perished in the flood. So the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness. You know what ungodliness means? It means someone who does not want to be like God, who doesn't care what God thinks, who doesn't care about God's world, God's feelings, God's initial creation. He's ungodly. He has removed God from his mind, just like Cain did when he left the presence of the Lord. All ungodliness. Unrighteousness, exactly the same thing. Righteousness is the foundation of God's throne. Righteousness and justice. But men, they've left that. And they suppress the truth. And all who think that God has not openly manifested how he feels about this are willfully forgetting the flood. So let's look at that verse. For this they willfully forget that the world, but by the word of God, the heavens were of old and the earth standing in water, out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished. Being flooded with water. Now, do you get the picture there? The world perished. Not the material creation, it didn't perish. But the world that John talked about, the love not the world nor the things that are in the world of man, the world whose father is the devil, whose will the world wants to do, whose will is to do only evil continually. Verse 7, the heavens and the earth which are now preserved by the same word are reserved for fire. Now, when that comes, it isn't just going to be the world that then existed perished. It's going to be the entire material creation. Not just the souls of men, not just the physical lives of men, but the entire material creation. The heavens will pass away with a great noise. The elements will melt with fervent heat. Now, compare that. You are the same forever. From everlasting to everlasting. The same today, yesterday, forevermore. And then we have this. That which is seen is only temporary. And will melt. And the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Now, the point of the lesson up to this point is just to show us something that's very important, because we think that this is normal, and this is the way it is. And it's very difficult for us to grasp the idea that the things that are seen are only temporary, and the things that are not seen are eternal. But when we start looking at the difference between the eternal realm where God lives and this temporary realm where we live, we start to grasp and understand that there's a character in heaven that doesn't exist on earth. And that's why you and I will be strangers and pilgrims if we make the decision to reflect that character in the world today, just like it's reflected in heaven. And that's what the scriptures can do for us. The scriptures can lead us from the aimless conduct handed down. You are of your father, the devil. It is his will you want to do. To one degree or another, we're all infected with that. They might forget, but we must never forget. So our world now is what we might call a paradox. A paradox is something when you can see something with your eyes, but it's really exactly the opposite of what you can see. And so what we see here is not reality. It's a temporary mirage. We've all seen people in the desert who are dying of thirst, and they can see that water just on the edge of the horizon, and they keep going, and they keep going, and they keep going. But it's not really there. And sooner or later, they figure out that it's not there. And that's when they die. Well, this world is a temporary mirage. And since all these things will be dissolved, what kind of persons ought you to be? You want to reflect the eternal values and the eternal elements of God's character? Or do we want to reflect the world, lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, which is not of the Father? And so it puts sin in a little bit different light. Instead of sin just being something that God doesn't like, sin is something that violates his nature and his character, and leads us into Satan's image and Satan's character. And that's why God says, I want you to see yourself as a sojourner and a pilgrim. We sang the song, "This world is not my home." What do we mean by that? The beauty of the material creation that reflects into our hearts, the glory of God, his everlasting power and divinity, that's not what we're talking about when we say this world is not our home. We're talking about the world that John was describing. The world that Eve brought into existence and Cain reflected. And at the flood, we see it fully developed. And from that point on, only the children of Abraham are reflecting the image and likeness of God. So, they're now in the majority, but they won't be in eternity. We'll be the majority in eternity. And that's really the point of being a sojourner and a pilgrim. There is a realm where we belong. Just like when people come to this country and they keep their clothing and they keep their language and they keep their customs, and the reason they do that is because they come from a realm where those things are normal and they want to keep that here. And we want to do that. We want to be sojourners. Our citizenship is in heaven, Paul said. And the things that are not seen are eternal, and we want to reflect that. So the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness Now, do we get that now? Ungodliness means you don't care about God. You don't want to be like God. You're not interested in how God feels about you. You have left God completely out of your life. So when we talk about godliness, we're talking about somebody who cares about God, who wants to reflect God's ways, who wants to be like God, and who loves God with all their heart. They are thinking about God, but these people are not. Now, those who are reflecting the divine nature, they think about God always because he's the source of everything. These people are selfish. They want to use everything God has given them, but take no responsibility for using them in the way that he created them to be used. That's why he's angry. And unrighteousness means complete unfairness. Most people don't care. Doing a word study last week of the three words for love, and it really struck me that the human love that most people have sees others as designed for their benefit, and they have absolutely no care or concern about how their actions will affect them. And so when we talk about stealing or lying or cheating or murder or adultery, we're talking about people who don't care about other people and what they want or what they need. They only care about how they can use those people for their own ends. That's what unrighteousness is. And people suppress the truth. Then verse 19, because what may be known of God is manifested in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power, his everlasting might, his everlasting power and divinity or Godhead or divine nature, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they didn't glorify him as God. That's why we're strangers and pilgrims, because we know God and we glorify him as God. We put him first. His needs are above our needs. His will is above our will. Just like Jesus in the garden, Jesus had needs and God had needs. Jesus first expressed his need. Father, please let this cup pass from me. I don't want this. I don't need it. It's not going to benefit me. But nevertheless, because of agape love, I will set aside my needs for the needs of others. That's what that passage in Philippians said. Vance quoted this morning in the Bible class. Have this mind in you, which was in Christ Jesus, who existing in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant. These people don't comprehend that. Because although they knew God, they didn't glorify him as God, nor were they thankful, but they became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. That's probably the perfect way to describe what happened from Cain until the flood. Man just became more and more estranged. They didn't glorify him as God. They were not thankful. They became futile in their thoughts, and they created an imaginary world. An imaginary world where they like it. They like this imaginary world, but it's only temporary, and it's not something that can exist because it exists outside of God. And God's eternal, and God's ways are eternal. And that's why you and I are strangers and pilgrims, strangers and sojourners, aliens in this world, because we want to reflect what God is. And once again, that's an amazing paradox. God's true children cannot feel at home in the creation he created for us. That's why it's only temporary. We won't feel that way when we get to heaven, when we get the new heavens and the new earth where righteousness dwell. We'll fit there, and God will fit there. And there'll be a complete image, mirror image, between the new heavens and the new earth and God's realm, because they will be one and the same. The vast majority of Adam's children want nothing to do with God or his lifestyle. We know that. We see it all around us. We watch the news. We see people that are so depraved that you just can't even understand how people could be like that. But what you're seeing is the heart of Satan. The more depraved they become, the more wicked they become, the more ungodly they become, the more evil they become more and more like their father, and less and less like the true Father, God, who is in heaven. And so Paul revealed that ever-repeating cycle. They knew God. They refused to glorify Him as God or even give thanks. And then, like Cain, they left the presence of the Lord, refused to retain God in their knowledge, created evolution, created the Big Bang, created idolatry, created anything and everything they possibly could to push God as far away out of their minds until He doesn't exist. You say, well, He doesn't exist for you, but you haven't changed anything. Because they are living a lifestyle that is so foreign to God that even if you mention God to them, it makes them angry. They don't want there to be a God. And when how did Paul put it? We are a savor to those who are perishing of death, unto death. But for those who are being saved, we are a savor of life to life. So those of us who are strangers and sojourners, when we meet people who are more godly than we are, we love to be around them. They are such a wonderful fresh breath of fresh air. And when we read about Jesus, we just feel this sense of joy and happiness and contentment because we want to be like Him and we know He's the image and likeness of God. Return to the world. People in this world, they don't feel that way. They hate God and they hate Jesus. And when we remind them of God and Jesus, they hate us. And that's really the problem. That's why God chose Abraham to become the father of all the strangers and the exiles, which are you and I. We love God. We want to be in God's presence. We love people who teach us about God. This kind of a sermon just makes us feel happy. It makes us feel wonderful. It gives us a sense of eternity. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. In this generation in Denver, there's not much. In this generation in most local churches right now, we don't see this. We see the side of God's people, strangers, exiles, aliens, people who don't fit in. But that's not how God sees it. Because when God adds up all of the people and all the generations and all the places of this world, He sees innumerable. And when we get to heaven, and we're in the image and likeness of God again, and so are they, we'll fit in. And there will be a majority of people. So the question is, do we want to be among them? Now, after he says this, I mean, just take a look here. Verse 12, this is verse 12. Now, here's verse 13. All these died in faith. This innumerable host of people that are the sons of Abraham, not fleshly sons of Abraham, but true spiritual sons of Abraham, reflecting the image and likeness of God to the very best of their ability and enjoying it and wanting it to be that way. And not caring that everybody else in the world sees us as being out of step. And not caring that this world and the image of this world does not reflect our image at all. We won't fit in here. We don't want to fit in here. These died in faith without receiving the promises. But having seen them and welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. Sad reality. We see it in the flood. We see it in Sodom and Gomorrah with Lot. We see it with the children of Israel wandering the wilderness with just Joshua and Caleb coming through. We see it in the times of Christ when just a small remnant became God's people and the rest of the people were, how did God put it, like wiping a dish. When Jerusalem was destroyed, Israel was removed. Verse 14, those who say such things make it clear that they're seeking a country of their own. Are you one of those people? Are you seeking a country of your own? Do you want to live in heaven where the reflection of God is mirrored back in our own souls, in our own words, in our own actions, in our own thoughts? Those who say such things make it clear. They are seeking a country of their own. We don't want to fit in. We don't want to wear their clothes. We don't want to eat their food. We don't want to talk their language. We don't want to enjoy their pleasures. And by that I mean we don't want to be involved in immodesty. We don't want to be involved in ungodliness. We don't want to be involved in wickedness and corruption and unrighteousness and no love. We want a country where God's ways. Verse 15. If they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. And that's a sad reality and danger, brethren, of what we're facing right now. Because we still live in this world. It's a temporary world. But it's seductive. And sometimes you think about the leeks and the onions and bread to the full, which was a complete lie, because those people were slaves and their life was bondage and misery and agony. And yet, what could they see? We remember the leeks and the onions and bread to the full. Sadly, people who are tempted to go back into the world, they don't remember the heartache and the agony and the downside of being a part of this world. They only remember those little things like the leeks and the onions and the bread to the full. Verse 16, as it is, they desire a better country. Now we're talking about better as far as more money or more power or more this or more that. We're talking about better because God's ways, God's love, God's mercy, God's truth, God's righteousness, all around us. That's what makes it better. A better country. God is not ashamed to be called their God. The eternal God who inhabits eternity, righteousness is the foundation of his throne, and he is love, and he sees those of us who are even dimly reflecting that. He says, I'm not ashamed to be your God because you see yourself as a stranger. You don't fit in here. You don't want to be here. You don't enjoy being involved in the wicked things that are going on around us. We can't enjoy. You know, Lot vexed his righteous soul with the ungodly conduct of the wicked. And that's how we should feel about it. If we're not vexed in our souls, I suspect God is ashamed of us. Because there's a lot to be vexed about in the world today. God is not ashamed to be called their God. He's prepared a city for those who reflect his image and likeness into a lost and dying world. Those who are strangers and pilgrims who are not afraid to proclaim what they believe, what they're seeking. So, true strangers and exiles scattered all over the earth. We're just a small pocket here. And down the road, there's another one. And they're on the other side of the world, there's another one. And many places scattered throughout all time. But don't be deceived. Those who want to love and be just and righteous and be in his image and likeness will ultimately be like the sand of the seashore. We will fit in. And those things that we hold so near and dear will be held near and dear by all of our peers, everyone in that realm, like the angels, who will live forever and ever, relishing and enjoying the righteousness of God and the justice of God and the love of God, not only in what we're receiving, but what we're able to give. And then we'll understand fully, it is more blessed to give than to receive. It's more blessed to have agape love and want to give your time and your effort for the needs of others. We may appear small because we long for a lifestyle, but he's prepared a city for us. It won't be long when the image of the country and the image of God will be the same again. There will not be a mirage. There will not be a seemingly existing world of rebellion and ungodliness against God that seems to go on and on and on and on and on. But it won't. Because God, at some point, will bring things back into equilibrium. Right now, they're not equal. Right now, there's a complete disassociation between this world and God's world. But at some point, the end will come. These things will be dissolved. And as Paul said, the things that are seen are temporary. But the things that are revealed in here, which are only seen by those who walk by faith and not by sight, by those who look at the things that are unseen, someday that will become the reality. And everyone else will be the mirage. Everyone else will fade away. And only those who love God will continue. And so, brethren, as we conclude our lesson this evening, I'd just like for all of us to give careful consideration. Are you a stranger and a pilgrim? Are you an alien? Are you a sojourner? Can you honestly sing, this world is not my home? My treasures are laid up. I can't feel at home in this world anymore. As we sing the song of encouragement this evening, if there's anyone in this room who recognizes that maybe God's a little bit ashamed of me right now, because I'm not like those people, Let's make some changes. If we can help you in any way, we invite you to come while we now together stand and sing.